Why have you said, there's a phrase you've used a number of times, you see censorship as opportunity. In what way is censorship an opportunity?
Censorship requires work. It is an investment for governments and other organizations to censor material that has already gone out to the public or to try and prevent it getting out to the public in the first place. And people don't tend to expend money without cause. So censorship is a signal that an organization or a government is fearful about the reform effects of an information release. So it's not that all information necessarily when it's released inevitably produces a positive political reform, but it's a very good suggestive signal that a government feels that it can be affected by what the population thinks.
So it's a kind of marker, like a sign of disease.
Yeah, exactly. I would say in a way it's a, you know, you can say on the one hand, it's a marker of disease. That is, there's things that the government is trying to cover up. On the other hand, it's a marker of the health of a political system in that the government is afraid of what people think. That the power structures are not so entrenched in a country that it cannot be reformed. So I see that the very aggressive censorship that has been done by the Chinese Public Security Bureau on SMS traffic, but historically on internet traffic and on movie theatres and book publication, is a sign that China is still a political country. That is, it's important to the Chinese government to have the favour of its people. And to keep the favour of its people, it fools them by preventing the true state of what's going on to be publicly revealed. But in the United States and other Western countries, we should be careful about saying that the situation of a relatively low lack of, a relative lack of traditional legal censorship is as a result of governments having nothing to conceal. Rather, in my experience, it's as a result of the strongest patronage systems within the country not being scared of what the public thinks. In these modern Western countries, the basic relationships between powerful groups is fiscal. So it's done in shareholdings or contracts between individuals and companies or bank holdings or multi-layered fiscal instruments. And when there's a change in political mood in a country as a result of exposure, it doesn't change the figures on the contract. It doesn't change the contents of the bank account. And so people in power have little to fear by press exposure.
I'm curious about to what extent you think WikiLeaks has created real-world political changes. I know you've said in other places that you think WikiLeaks did have something to do with the Arab Spring. What specifically?
It's quite an interesting story. We intentionally made Le Monde, a francophone, French-speaking newspaper, one of our partners in Cablegate, in order to get that information into francophone Africa, because we perceived that a lot of content in the cables would reveal corruption, human rights abuses in francophone regimes like that of Ben Ali in Tunisia. And early in December, that information came out in Le Monde, and additional cables spread to a associated WikiLeaks site called Tunis Leaks, and an Arab publishing newspaper in Lebanon called Al Akbar, who translated a number of cables into Arabic. And as a result, the Tunisian government banned WikiLeaks, banned Al-Akbar, banned internet access to Al-Akbar. Hackers came in, which appeared to have been state-based, and redirected all of Al-Akbar to another site, entirely shut it down. They came back up, and then a very aggressive attack came in and completely wiped out the cable publishing operations. Computer hackers supportive to us then went into Tunisian government websites and redirected them to the WikiLeaks page for Tunisia, which spoke about these cables. Now, it's not that Tunisians didn't strongly suspect that the Ben Ali regime is corrupt. Rather, it was the degree of personal details given by U.S. ambassadors that made it completely undeniable to the United States and to other Western countries that the Tunisian regime was corrupt, and set off sentiments within the power struggle between the political class and the military class in Tunisia that the United States didn't particularly favor the political class, so that if push came to shove, the United States would not intervene in a military coup. It would probably support the army.
Mm.
Then when you had this intellectual knowledge about the corruption spreading around Tunisia and its neighbors, this was then there's an emotional kickoff to it, which was a young market fruit seller set fire to himself on December 26 and was hospitalized. The decision by Al Jazeera to film and broadcast to the rest of the Arab-speaking public those images of protests in Tunisia then encouraged countries like Egypt to start their own protests. And simultaneously, we were pushing out as many cables as we could on corruption under Mubarak and human rights abuses there. And there was an attempted peace deal. We also had an Egyptian partner, Al-Masih Al-Yum, publishing from Cairo. There was an attempted peace deal to save Mubarak, which the US and Europe and Israel were trying to broker, which is to take the chief of intelligence, domestic intelligence, Suleiman, and make him a vice president, a sort of figure replacement for Mubarak. We knew from our work that Suleiman was an awful piece of work, and US ambassadors had described him as one of Mubarak's torturers, and that Mubarak was happy to turn the blind eye to his methods. And this was the individual that the US and Israel were wanting, and the State Department were wanting to take over from Mubarak in a public sense. And it was the revelations of Suleiman's activities and the Western recognition internally that Suleiman was a torturer and a very divisive figure within Egypt that made it impossible for continued support of Suleiman by the West. And him being taken out then permitted space, I think, for an alternative option, and the alternative option was the complete removal of Mubarak's group from office and the takeover by the Egyptian army.
So here's an example of a way in which information that WikiLeaks released produced some real political change, really changed a political landscape. Doesn't that give WikiLeaks itself precisely the kind of power you object to in others?
Well, it gives us the power of the public. As an organization, all that we do is designed to make things public. The entire fruits of our labor are presented to the public. So this permits us to be held to account by the public because they can see what we do, which is publishing. It does occasionally put us into a power position when we are forced to choose what we're going to publish first because of resource constraints. But as an organization, you know, we are not an organization that is out to make the most money. We are an organization that is out to produce the most amount of justice. And that's why sources deal with us and trust us. They understand that. So when we are faced with resource constraints and have to publish one thing before another because of those resource constraints, then we choose what is going to have the most impact.
And what are the kinds of questions you ask yourself? I mean, if you get access to an informational bombshell, you have to decide how much to release and when and how. What are the kinds of questions and, you know, sort of scenarios that you play out before you decide to release something?
We promise our sources two things. Provided the information that they submit to us fits the criteria, that is, it is of diplomatic, political, ethical, or historical significance, has not been released before, and is under some kind of threat. So the person releasing it is under some kind of physical or legal threat. Then we promise we will eventually release all of it. We will eventually publish all of it. And why I say eventually is because there are resource constraints and we might need to delay the publication of some small parts of the material for human rights reasons. So in keeping to this promise of producing the greatest impact, we look at things like is there some important timing, a lead up to an election, or is there a revolution on foot? So these things go into factoring to our decision making, and it would be nice. In an ideal situation, we would have infinite resources and could get through everything instantly. But given the sort of threats that we're under and the taking away of 90% of our resources by the big banks, it is impossible, unfortunately, for us to publish everything as soon as we get it.
Do you play out scenarios in which you think, well, if we release this piece of information now, how might it be used either in ways we would like or in ways we wouldn't like?
We see ourselves as lawyers or advocates who represent the desires of our sources to the public. And so just like a lawyer will play out what is the best strategic approach to get the impact that the client wants in court, we play out what is the best strategic approach to get the impact that our sources want in the jury of public opinion.
Do you ever worry that you could be co-opted? I mean, you could be presented with some information that would purport to be explosive, but would in fact, come from a corporation or a particular government in a very roundabout way.
Yes, but we've become the main experts in sorting the wheat from the chaff, and thus far, over 4.5 years in 120 countries, have never been shown to be wrong. I'm sure one day there will be a first time where we miss something, but thus far we've been able to spot all the frauds from the information that is true. And in a sense, part of that is because WikiLeaks is the worst place in the world to get out a false story by publishing all the primary source content to the public. the people affected by the story can kick over it. But when intelligence sources say want to get something out through the regular mainstream press, the mainstream press generally doesn't publish the original source material, and that's why you can see these cases such as with Judith Miller in the New York Times leading up to the Iraq War. I'm sure if she had published the primary source material that U.S. intelligence was giving her, fabricated about Iraq trying to acquire material for nuclear and chemical weapons, that the at least the Iraqi government, if not its supporters or those opposed to the war, would have pored over that material in fine detail and exposed it quickly to be a fraud. That wasn't possible because the New York Times chose not to release the material.
I'm curious, what about Democracy in America? I mean, is there information out there that, if made public, would have the potential to transform the balance of power in this country?
I think it's quite difficult. I've wondered what that information would be and look like. When we released, we're still in the process of releasing Cablegate, but when we entered into the Cablegate publication phase, we saw a reaction by Washington and its friends that was cartoonish, that was... had a sort of produced a sort of McCarthyist fervor for around 2 months was very startling and unusual, but reminded everyone of what was happening under the Soviet. And so that's an example where information at that level and at such quantity can produce significant reform effects and produce a back reaction by people in power. What other sort of information would be like that, given the extraordinary fiscalization in the United States? Perhaps all emails of the New York Times going back 10 years. Maybe that would produce a similar understanding of the interplays between the big power and patronage groups in the U.S. Perhaps the same for the finance industry, although within finance matters tend to be quite complicated. Maybe all the emails of the U.S. Congress, if you had them all going back a few years, perhaps that would produce a similar level of reaction. But I think because of the strong fiscalization, which results in a depoliticization of the basic power structures in the country, it is going to take something at that level. Of course, the National Security Agency intercepts SMS and telephone traffic coming in and out of the United States, and a number have suggested domestically in places in the United States as well. If that material was released, we might see a desire to reform the intelligence sector.
So is that your wish list, in a sense?
Well, I have a long wish list, but I think that for the United States, that wouldn't be a bad start.
Julian, you posted a parody of a MasterCard commercial on YouTube, and it ends with the words, "Some people don't like change. For everyone else, there's WikiLeaks." Can you paint a picture of the changed world that you imagine? And what would the world you dream of look like?
So this is an interesting question. I'm not personally of the view that we can prescribe a course of political action, that anyone can, and to that degree that all current political theories are bankrupt. And why are they bankrupt? Because they are not based upon an understanding of how the world actually works in terms of how human institutions truly behave, the ones that are important, the ones that manage our global and national affairs. So until we have that information, We cannot prescribe, and in fact no one could prescribe, what should be done and what should the world look like. But if we step back, we can see that there are certain ingredients that are necessary for any harmonious and rational society. And those are, number one, to understand as much as possible of your own history, including your immediate history. And number two, for people to freely and safely communicate their knowledge of the world with each other. And it is from these two aspects of a human society that all rational decision-making and understanding of politics and economics and society and our place in history and in the world come. So we must have these building blocks to create a decent society and a decent civilization. And that's our work, and that has been my life's work, is to try and get these two most important building blocks from which we can derive the sort of human state that is appropriate for the life we live. At the moment, we don't even know the life we live.
So to go back to your wish list, what if you got one of the big items on your wish list? You know, all of the congressional emails going back for 10 years. What kind of, I guess, what do you think would happen? I'm thinking that we're doing...
It's tremendously interesting to speculate, isn't it? What would happen? Of course, we'd have to conduct a big operation like we did with Cablegate to maximize the impact and make sure it was done as safely as possible. But it is very interesting to speculate what would the changes be like, and what other points in history have there been like that? There has been... Well, Cablegate has produced some interesting changes, an example like that. But there are other cases. So in the de-Sovietization, some parts of National Archives became public. In East Germany, the Stasi Archives, while not becoming public, became available to individuals who requested them, requested their own file or their parents who had died. And that produced some changes about the view of how society was. Of course, in those cases with Eastern Europe and the de-Sovietized states, the revolution had already occurred. So it's hard to know what the effect was of the information versus the revolution that led to the release of the information. But one might imagine, for instance, that if all the Stasi records had come out, why the Stasi was still in power, the Stasi would no longer be in power. In Egypt, we saw protesters raid the Amdawa. And so it's one of the reasons we feel confident in saying that the Egyptian revolution was genuine, is that the Egyptian Secret Service that had been headed up by Suleiman was raided by protesters and all the archives pulled out, and eventually the whole 100,000-strong domestic security service jettisoned.
Well, it's interesting that we're doing this interview at a time when London's streets are burning because of riots, and you're under house arrest not very far from there. Is that the kind of thing that potentially you could imagine happening in the U.S. or in Western European countries?
Well, all sorts of things happen, and there's tremendous political change. We made the joke that that perhaps it was the collapse of News of the World that led to the riots in London, because no one had anything to distract them anymore.
Oh. Time for another WikiLeaks release.
Yeah. So I'm out of time now, unfortunately.
Yes. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
You're most welcome. Thanks.
Bye-bye.